when someone first dies, they leave their body. They say they're still themselves, and they feel more alive than they've ever felt before. In fact, not just with five senses, some say it's like 50 or like 100 senses, like supercharged experience of life, but still themselves, completely themselves. They still have a body, but it's a spiritual body. But even look like the same, feel the same, you know, same humor. I'm going to have to put up with your jokes in heaven still.
That's going to be the best part of heaven. What are you talking about, John? Welcome to The Aggressive Life. Back in February, if you've been with us for a while, you know, we made a really huge change to the podcast. We started doing video, and Dirt just had more hours every week where he was making video edits instead of just sound edits. And it's gone really well. Views on YouTube and other places have been going up, and it's good. And we just want to serve as many people as possible. Sometimes with some of our stuff that's been released before, but not in video. So occasionally we're going to release a podcast in video that wasn't released in video before. Now, I got to tell you, these videos are probably not as good as the ones we have right now. We're recording in 4K and all that stuff. But for some of us, watching and seeing, even if it's less than normal video, less than ideal video, is just what the doctor ordered. We're going to start with this episode right here. This is my good friend, John Burke. I won't give a huge introduction of him because it'll happen here on the podcast, but this is far and away the most popular podcast we've ever done, talking about life after death and having hope for encountering God when you die, or perhaps your dead relatives when you die. Mesmerizing and encouraging and intense. So here we go. The video podcast with my good friend and best-selling, I mean best-selling New York Times author, John Burke. Welcome to The Aggressive Life. What happens when you die? My friend John Burke thinks he's got a pretty good handle on the answer, and after reading his book, I think he's got a pretty good handle on it as well. For 35 years and counting, John's been collecting, examining, and dissecting stories of NDAs, that is non-descriptive epistemology. No, I mean near-death experiences, that's what it is, from around the world. And while these stories come from people all over the map, the similarities he's found and the conclusions he's come to are really pretty astounding. He's studied over 1,000 near-death experiences, and he's compiled his findings into the New York Times best-selling book, Imagine Heaven, Near-Death Experiences, God's Promises, and the Exhilarating Future That Awaits You. Yeah, genuine best-selling book on the New York Times list. I want to be a best-selling author on the New York Times list. So today we're going to get into how he's done that and talk about heaven. You know, it's one of those questions that many of us have, or maybe one of those beliefs that many of us have, but we don't think about too much. What about questions I want to throw John's way, like, am I going to see my pets again? What about purgatory? Will I know people in heaven? Will I remember my life on earth? Or even this, how can we even know for sure there's a heaven? And more. So besides being a best-selling author, John has been a really, really close friend of mine for, gosh, 25 years. He's also the founding and senior pastor of Gateway Church, a multi-site church in Austin, Texas. And let's have John on The Aggressive Life. John Burke, welcome to The Aggressive Life.
That was an intro I would expect, Brian. That was perfect.
Well, thank you. Well, you would not expect a perfect intro from me, but I'm thankful that you would have thought that, Big John.
Yeah.
So long time no talk, man. We've you and I are like feast and famine. We were like best buddies hanging out. We went sailing a long, long time ago. We'd talk the phone. And then like there's years and years of no talk. And then we talk again. It's like picking up where we were just yesterday. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Let's talk about you for a minute. Heaven. When did you start getting interested in heaven?
Well, I don't know if I've ever even told you this story, but, you know, my dad died. And as it was cancer. So it took a while. And I was an agnostic still. And, definitely didn't believe in Jesus. Wasn't sure what I thought about God. Didn't really care. And then he gets cancer and it's looking bad. And someone gives him the very first book, the first research on near-death experiences. And I pick it up on his bedside table and I just start looking at it, read the first, and I didn't stop. I read the whole thing in one night. And I was like, crap, this could be like evidence that this God, Jesus stuff is real. Because so many of them were talking about seeing God and this brilliant God of light, seeing Jesus. And so that actually opened me up to exploring faith. And so it was a couple of years after that, that I actually came to faith in Christ in a small group Bible study. But, and since then, I studied engineering. I was an engineer for a number of years, and I've always had this like curiosity, like what are these things? And how do they relate to the Bible? And so I've studied the Bible for 35 years, and I've also come across just one after another. And I actually gave my first talk on this, on how the Bible and these near-death experiences intersect in 1989 at University of California, Santa Barbara. Hmm. And I didn't realize it then, but that was kind of the melting pot of where people who were starting to report these because I think with modern medical resuscitation, more and more are happening and they're getting reported more and more.
So give us your intro, your primo, your Cliff Note version on what is an NDE? What are people seeing? I know most of us have heard, some people die and they see a light at the end of the tunnel and they feel some love. Maybe we've heard a couple of those stories, but yeah. Like, just give us like your clinical understanding with how many people have you interviewed, by the way, on this topic?
It's well over 1,000, probably closer to 1,500, 2,000 now.
Okay, so
a lot.
So for those of us who don't know a lot about NDEs or have just heard stories about light, tell us what it is, what's going on?
So, yeah, and let me tell you what convinced me, and not just me, but many medical doctors who were not, they weren't believers in the afterlife. So when someone dies, a near-death experience is when someone clinically dies, meaning our way of measuring death, heartbeat stops, no brain waves, and sometimes for 5 minutes, sometimes for hours. Like we're talking about people who've had no brain waves for hours and yet they're resuscitated or miraculously come back. And they commonly have this experience that they say is more real than anything they've ever experienced on this earth. Which, how do you have something more real? But that is what they say. And I've come to believe they're experiencing something beyond our three dimensions of space and one dimension of time. And that's why they say that. But when someone first dies, they leave their body. They say they're still themselves and they feel more alive than they've ever felt before. In fact, not just with five senses. Some say it's like 50 or like 100 senses, like supercharged experience of life, but still themselves, completely themselves. They still have a body, but it's a spiritual body. But even look like the same, feel the same, same humor. I'm going to have to put up with your jokes in heaven still.
That's going to be the best part of heaven. What are you talking about, John?
Yeah, your sense of humor, it's not going to get better just because of heaven.
Hey, guess what? Guess who likes my sense of humor? God, that's who likes my sense of humor. He gets me. He understands me. You don't, little weenie boy, but God does.
You're absolutely right. So here's the deal is that when people have this experience, many times initially, they're still in the room where their resuscitation is taking place. And so they are able to witness what's going on in the room, even though their body is out, they're dead, they're clinically dead. They're not seeing anything, hearing anything, there are no brain waves. In fact, you know, that's a lot of the evidence that, you know, they've been able to show absolutely no brain activity. So where are they able to observe these things? So I'll give you an example. One guy in Holland had a heart attack out in a park. They brought him into the ER. They're gonna intubate him and shock him. The nurse realizes he's got dentures, so takes the dentures out. Then they intubate him, they shock him, they get his heart going again, but he didn't recover in the ER. They bring him to another room. He recovers a week later. And he sees that nurse and he says, hey, that nurse knows where my lost dentures are. The nurse, that's the nurse that put them in that cart with all the bottles on it. It was the crash cart. And he had put it in the bottom drawer. And so they found the dentures. And then he explained that, yeah, I was there and I saw and reported all the doctors and who all was in the room.
Wow.
Now that's not uncommon. That's incredibly common. And in fact, there have been scientific studies done on the accuracy of these observations. And they found that, you know, of like one study done with 93 NDEers who each one might make, you know, 10 observations, right? They found 92% of their observations were 100% accurate. The other 6% were mostly accurate. Only 2% were inaccurate. And then they compared that to a control group of heart attack patients who had not had an NDE, and they asked, what do you think happened in your resuscitation? And they weren't even close. They were guessing, like, you know, stuff they'd seen on TV. Here's the thing. There have actually been, like, Gallup poll did a study on this. They found 1 out of 25 Americans has had an NDE. More recently, the European Academy of Neuroscience did a study across 35 countries, found 1 out of 10 people claims they've had an NDE. I think that's actually a little high. I think it's still more like 1 out of 20. But we're talking about people all over the world, and they're saying the same things. And so they're, you know, there've been
the same things. Like what? What's the same things? What are the commonalities?
Yeah. Okay. So leave your body. You still have a spiritual body. And not every NDE happens in exactly the same order, but the commonalities are consistent. So I'll give you kind of a, you know, like a generic of all of them combined. They have a sense of, they can see like telescopic vision miles away or anything really up close. By the way, all these things I'm going to be talking about are in the scriptures. And that's what a lot of Christians don't understand. It's all there. It's phenomenal. But, you know, not many people have really looked in and studied it to go, oh, that telescopic vision is exactly what John was reporting in the book of Revelation. When he is taken to heaven, he's up on a very high mountain looking down on the city of God, and he reads the names on the foundation stones. Hmm. How does he read the names?
Interesting.
From up on a very high mountain. And so there's all kinds of stuff like that. So oftentimes people then, they're observing the room, then they travel. And some say they go through a tunnel. Well, it's like a tunnel that opens up, and they describe it differently. Some it's a dark tunnel, some it's not. Some don't do the tunnel thing. Some travel, oftentimes they'll say with their angels, and they'll travel, and it's like out of our atmosphere. They're looking back at Earth, and they go, and they're going like light speed somewhere. They all tend to end up, well, not always. We'll come back to that. There are places in between where I'm going to say, and sometimes that's where they stop. But many times they end up in a place of brilliant light, beauty just like on Earth. It's not unlike Earth, flowers, mountains, trees, streams, you know, grass, colors far beyond our color spectrum. And they commonly talk about that, which again, makes sense. It, you know, I'll tell you the best way to illustrate one of the full blown ones is with my favorite one, which is, the blind ones. So when a blind person dies clinically, and has near-death experience, they see and experience the exact same things a sighted person does. Hmm. So they see their body, they can see what's going on. So Vicky was blind from birth, never seen anything. So same thing happens. She sees her body there. She realizes because she notices her wedding ring and her long hair. And she realizes, I think I'm dead. She was a believer in Christ. So she's like, you know, they're not listening to me, because she was trying to get their attention. She's like, I know where I'm going. I'm out of here. And she goes up through the roof of the hospital and is gone, comes into this place of, it was like a garden. It's beautiful. Lights coming out of everything. But she said the light wasn't light like we see. It's like light that is love, light that is life, and it's coming out of everything. So she said, it's coming out of the trees, it's coming out of the grass, it's coming out of the birds, and it's coming out of the people too. And there's this great group of people coming toward her. It's like a welcoming committee that's coming toward her. Now, let me pause a second, because, you know, my interest is showing how this is what God's been revealing for thousands and thousands of years. This is not new to our century. And so you think about it, like the light coming out of everything. In Isaiah 60, Isaiah says, there's no sun or moon in heaven, for the glory of God is its light. In Revelation 21, it says, there's no sun or moon, because God is its light and the Lamb, Jesus, is its lamp, and the nations will walk in that light. Hmm. And that's exactly what they're describing, this light that's coming out of everything, that's giving love, bringing love and life to everything. How would a blind person, and I'm talking about multiple blind people, I report three blind people in Imagine Heaven, how would they all know that light comes out of things? Why would they report that? Because they would have heard on earth, light shines on things, not out of things. And even out of the people. And so, you know, Daniel chapter 12, the angel tells Daniel, the righteous will shine like the sun. Jesus in Matthew 13 said the same thing. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in their Father's kingdom. So this is the sharing of the glory of God, the light, the love of God. And that's a commonality. So here's Vicky. A welcoming committee is a commonality. The dead friends and relatives who have already passed on, they're there to welcome us. We remember each other. We remember our histories. You know, our sense of humor is the same. And she sees Diane and Debbie, who were two of her good friends that died at age 9 and 11. They lived together in a home for the blind. And she said, but they were in their prime. And you know, they recognized each other right away. And then she sees someone else over on the right, brighter than any of them. And she turns and looks, and it's Jesus. And she goes to him, and he hugs her. And she describes him just kind of like you would think of Jesus. You know, shoulder length hair, a beard. But she said as she was hugging him, there was like light coming out of the beard. And a robe down to about his ankles. And when he looked into her eyes, she said it was like he saw into every part of me. And she said it was the most amazing thing. I could get lost in his eyes forever. And he could see everything. He knew everything. He said, but you wanted him to know everything. And this love that is just overwhelming, just this unconditional love. And these are all commonalities of people that they experience all around the globe. Another commonality in his presence, he gives him a life review. So he gives Vicky a life review. And literally, they relive their lives. Now, again, time doesn't work the same way on the other side. So 2 Peter 3:8 says, to the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a day. And that's exactly what these people say. Some say, well, there was no time. And some say, well, there was time, but there was just plenty of time all the time. It was just different. So they relive their lives watching it from like a panoramic three-dimensional perspective. But not only are they seeing themselves and what they did interacting with everyone, they're remembering the thoughts, the feelings, but they're also experiencing what the other person thought and felt. And sometimes how that impacted others, you know, like the ripple effect life by life by life. And they all come back saying the same thing. They absolutely know God is love, And what he cares about most is how we treat one another, how we love other people, and that's the most important thing. And so then another commonality is in his presence, many times he'll say, hey, your purpose on earth isn't done yet. You got to go back. Or sometimes he'll say things like, you know, you didn't die yet. You've got to go back. Hmm. Or sometimes he'll say, the choice is yours. Do you want to go on or do you want to go back? And 30% of them know they come to some border or boundary and they describe it differently, but they know it's a border or boundary that if they cross over, they can't come back.
Interesting.
That's very important, actually, because I think it's part of why it took me 35 years to write the book. Because I had a lot of like, well, what's that? You know, how do you explain that? And how does that work with what the Bible says? And so some of those like that really helped me.
That's interesting. I had one of the worst moments in ministry. Had to be the worst. I should say the worst is when opening night of a Christmas production, we had somebody who was one of the Magi fell to her death.
Man, you know, I remember.
You remember that, right?
I remember. Often. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to go into that whole story and go all down the rabbit trail. Maybe someday we'll do that there, but not ruling for this, other than to set it up to say, you know, we prayed, me and a buddy of mine, Steven, we just prayed hardcore for Carrie. It was like intense prayer, just going after it, singing, dancing around her bed, just doing anything to scream out to the heavens for some healing as she lied under a heating blanket. And we just always were wondering why nothing took place. We just felt like, I know that God doesn't say yes to every healing prayer, I know that, but it just seemed like there was unfinished business and there was something we weren't understanding there. A buddy of mine, like a couple months later, said, hey, God woke me up and spoke to me. And he's an attorney. He's not the kind of guy to even say this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. He doesn't just like wear God in his sleeve, just try to impress mm-hmm. people with spirituality. That's not King Arthur. That's what I call him. He said, I felt God said to me, he said, tell Brian and Stephen that their prayers were great. I appreciate it. But when Carrie was with me, she didn't want to go back, and I gave her the option, and she chose not to go back.
I was just about to say, you know, that's because almost none of them want to come back.
Yeah,
and we're even talking about mothers who love their little children like you can't even believe, and yet when they are in God's presence, I mean, that's it. It's like they say things like, "I'm home. This is where this is the answer to everything I've ever longed for on earth. Why would I ever want to leave this? This is the like summation of all that I've was striving for or trying to find but could never find on earth."
And so you're saying they don't want to come back, but then they get resuscitated and they just come back involuntarily, or what?
Well, some choose, some do. Hmm. Some are like, you know, like I.
And I'd really like to see the Bengals game this weekend, so yeah, just send me on back.
That's not going to be the reason, probably. You know, like I just interviewed this guy in Australia who is a PhD. And he said to Jesus, because he had a daughter in a wheelchair, his wife had divorced him, he had a daughter who, you know, was in a wheelchair, and he had four other kids, and one was only 8 years old. And he thought about what they would go through. And he said, oh man, it was the hardest decision ever. But he said, I think I should go back. Mm. So sometimes that is, you know, that's usually is the reason. But let me say one other thing that's really important. So the people that I've tried to focus on, and especially that I include in Imagine Heaven, they are spine surgeons, commercial airline pilots, lawyers, bank presidents. I mean, the tenured college professors.
These aren't unemployed snake handlers.
People say things, oh, they're trying to make a buck off a book. Well, first of all, books don't even make a buck. You know, it's like you don't, you know, each book, if you make a buck, that's pretty good. You know, they don't make a lot of money. And secondly, these people don't need money. It hurts their career to say they died and saw Jesus and saw heaven and describe all this wacko stuff. And yet they say, I have to tell it.
thinking about the PhD guy in Australia or a bunch of these other folks. That would be obviously an awful decision to make to leave God a place where there's no sorrow, no tears, perfect love. But at the same time, to then have another shot at life knowing that there's really no bad days here because on the other side, it's all going to be good. That's got to be clarifying, motivating, and incredibly refreshing. No? Yes?
Well, it's interesting. It's incredibly clarifying. So, I mean, one of the big evidences is these people come back and their lives change. They're not that interested in material possessions or climbing the corporate ladder type stuff. They really are interested in doing things that will serve people and, you know, show the love of God to people. You know, like this tenured college professor I interviewed, he was an atheist and he gets rescued from hell when he cries out to Jesus. He comes back and 2 years later, he leaves his tenured college professorship to become a Christian pastor. His wife, who's still an atheist, divorces him because she thinks he's whacked. Hmm. So, and there's stuff like that. There's so much like that. Like, that's what convinced me. And that's what made me finally write the book. I was like, man, you know, this is a new apologetic for a global world. I mean, God is giving evidence of the reality of who he is all across the globe.
You mentioned hell. How many people did you interact with, had an experience in hell? That's part one. Part two is, why do you think there's other people who die and they report none of this?
Yeah, great questions. Well, so initially, when these started to come out in the late 70s and 80s, people weren't reporting anything about hell at all. Hmm. And if you think about it, first of all, people who did report heaven just got called crazy and whacked and nobody had listened to them, including pastors and Christians, which is why many of them like left the church and were like, you know what? They don't get it. But the other side of that, hell.
Yeah.
So more and more people started reporting hellish experiences, the more common the reports of these got. And a study done in the 90s found that 23% of people who came forward to report a near-death experience had a hellish experience. Now, more recently—
24%.
23%, yeah. 23%. Now, but that's a study— That's just a study done of people who raised their hand and said, let me tell you about my near-death experience.
Right.
That doesn't include a sample of the population.
Well, not only that, who wants to admit, yeah, I went to hell. Yeah, we don't want to tell stories about light or we're not going to tell any story. Yeah, I got tormented for the rest of eternity because of my lack of relationship with God and how I led a loser life. Yeah, no one wants to tell that story.
No, and, you know, the people I've interviewed, like they literally have PTSD from it.
Hmm. Wow.
It's not like Howard, that college professor, every time I've interviewed him multiple times and every time he goes like, that's as far as I go. I can't go farther than that because it triggers him.
Hmm. Wow.
So it's real. It's not an imaginary, you know, dreamlike state. This is not it's not anything like that. You know, in fact, the way I've described it after talking to so many of these is imagine if we're living this three-dimensional experience, but imagine if we're actually living it on like a flat black and white painting on the wall, right, of your house. Death is separation. So, you know, when we die, our soul separates from our body. So imagine at death, then you're peeled off that flat two-dimensional picture and you're brought out into these three dimensions of color that were all around you all the time. You can look back and see your flat world for what it was, but now this is more than a two-dimensional experience of life. And then imagine you're pressed back into the flat two-dimensional painting and you're trying to describe three dimensions and color, but in two-dimensional up, down, sideways, no in and out at all. And black and white terms. Hmm. You're trying to describe all that. I mean, it would be impossible. And that's exactly what these people say. It's like, yeah, that's exactly why it's hard to talk about and why I didn't for so long. Because many of them don't talk about it.
So you're saying there's 24% of people who have these stories. So the other...
I think it's more.
Okay, so whatever percent it is of people who don't have these stories, if people don't have these stories, which is it? Is it that God doesn't give them an NDE because he knows it can be resuscitated and it's not time? Is it they're going to a place of darkness? What's one of the descriptions of hell? Just a place of darkness. I'm trying to not be too much of a theological geek here, but I do have a seminary education. I'm kind of into the Bible. You know, there's the whole thing of is hell a physical, literal, eternal torment, or is the soul destroyed and you're over and done? Is that hell? So are these people like?
Well, let me start with this. A near-death experience is not full biological death. These people all came back. So they did not cross that border or boundary, whatever that is and whatever that means. I personally think, and you know, one of the things I wrestled with is Hebrews 9:27 says it's appointed for mankind to die once, and then comes judgment, which these, you know, didn't kind of fit that. And so it was confusing to me for a long time. And then the other thing that was confusing is, like you said, how come people who have they live hell, you know, hellish lives, right? And then they have good experiences, or so it seems. And then why do some have these hellish experiences and then others see God? And that was very confusing to me until I realized some of them, Jesus literally tells them, you haven't died yet. Other times they are seeing heaven, like the heavens of the paradise, like the New Jerusalem, like the city of God. And they describe what's in Revelation. Hmm. So it's, you know, it's amazing. Other times Jesus has said to them, you know, do you want to go on with us to heaven? We can't, you know, we came out to meet you. So it's kind of like they're in this limbo place. It's not limbo. It's some call it like a, I knew it was kind of like a waiting room or something, or it's like just a meeting place or something. And it's kind of bizarre. I mean, there are a lot of things about this that I was just like, no, really? And it kind of tripped me out, you know? Like, I mean, I'm a normal person, so it's weird to me too,
yeah.
Right? But when I saw that the things that they're saying are what the scripture says, but some of the things that the scripture says, you know, that I used to think are just like, oh, well, that's, you know, sounded like a cheesy televangelist set, right? Streets of gold and, you know, gates of pearls and all that. Well, then I encounter, you know, commercial airline pilots and doctors and lawyers, and they're describing the same thing, but they're explaining that, well, the streets are gold, but it's like transparent, and it's not like gold like our gold. It's not like gaudy gold. It's like this otherworldly kind of material.
Interesting. So that
that you can see through. And the gates are like a pearlescent, transparent. You can see through them, but it's almost like a like if you liquefied pearl and then it's moving. It's like alive or something, and you can go through it.
Fascinating.
So it's not, so, you know, when John says there were 12 gates of pearl, you know, I used to picture like 12 gates, like wrought iron gates and all these pearls stuck all over them. And, you know, these golden brick road streets. And I was like, oh, that, you know, and I didn't believe it. Honestly, I thought, oh, that's a metaphor. Well, these NDEers actually convinced me, no, that's literal, but it's literal in a very otherworldly way.
That's really good, because I was wondering, how do all of these stories coincide and line up with each other, at least a lot of them? And one of my thought was, well, because people have heard of pearly gates and golden brick roads, and so they read into that when they're in the NDE. But you're saying, no, it's not that at all. And they all surprisingly describe something that you would never expect from reading the Bible. That's interesting.
And why would they say the same things over and over and over again? And here's the thing that's been fascinating, Brian. It's kind of like I'm a reporter and there was a car accident And I go around to all the different corners of the street and interview different people. And some say, you know, I saw the back lift off the car, but I don't know if it dented in the front left bumper. And then the other guy said, oh, it just smashed the front left bumper, right? And so you got to go, oh, well, if it hit the front left bumper, the guy across the street might see the back lift up, but he didn't see that. And so you start to triangulate and see that, oh, they're all talking about the same place and saying the same things. You know, like here's one. I'm just always amazed at how many people say, and the grass, like it was the greenest green, but it was grass like you've never seen it. It was like it was alive and this light coming out of it. Well, I mean, you and I have studied the Bible. I would have never said that. I also would never have said there were colors far beyond our color spectrum. And yet, if you think about it, if the light of heaven is the glory of God, you know, the colors of earth are the color spectrum of the sun. So now we're talking about the color spectrum of the glory of God. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
You got so many just like trippy things like that that I've come across. And I'm just like, wow, amazing.
Man Camp 2025 is just around the corner, October 17th and 19th in Southwest Ohio. Thousands of men from all over the literal world are going to be descending on our property, connecting with each other, having fun, laughing, connecting with God, stretching ourselves, pushing ourselves, playing all sorts of things. It's really going to be phenomenal. And this year, man, we have some new things we're doing this year that I want to make sure that you're in on. First off, Bear Grylls, world-renowned survivalist camper. Bear Grylls is going to be with us. He's going to be great. Dante Bowe, Grammy Award-winning artist. Dante is going to be there with us, helping us out with worship. It is going to be an amazing three-day experience. Get off the grid. Push yourself. Try something new. Form some bonds. Form some relationships. Have some hangout time. Have some laughter. We get all that and a lot, lot more at Man Camp. I've got a 15% discount off code for you if you enter podcast15 at checkout, podcast15. You can claim your spot right now and do it quickly at mancamp.us. And then invite someone to come with you, and I'll be looking forward to you there. It seems like I'm running into more and more people, or at least reading more things and listening to more things about people who are really big on psychedelics. And some of them say that these NDEs are basically a form of psychedelic, and therefore that's why we should do more psychedelics. We'll feel one with one another, we'll love one another. And some of them would say, or not them, all of them would say, as I understand, that these people are just describing a psychedelic experience at the end of their life. Their neurochemicals just kind of gush all over the place, and they start seeing freaky things. That's what's happening. What do you say to that?
Well, I
first of all, have you ever done any psychedelics?
No, but a lot, not a lot, but several NDEers had.
Oh, okay.
And they told me, like,
secondly, would you like to do psychedelics with me? Because you'd be a fun person to do psychedelics with. If I ever did psychedelics, John, I think you'd be the first one, because I bet it would be awesome doing a trip with you.
I bet if you did psychedelics, it'd have the opposite effect, because I think you're already there.
I'm sorry. So the people you talk to have been on psychedelic trips and had NDEs. Tell me what they said.
And they said, oh, it's nothing the same, nothing at all. And I've had, so in this new book I'm writing, I take all the alternative explanations that people have come up with. They've come up with 30 alternate explanations for what an NDE is. You know, like it's just like that tunnel vision when, you know, fighter pilot syndrome. It's like DMT. It's like ayahuasca. They're all these, and they're 30. You know why they're 30 alternate explanations?
No.
Because there's not one good one that they can agree on. Mm. If there was one good one, they'd be like, well, that disproves it. But there's not. So they come up with a new one all the time. So I go through 10 points of evidence that any new alternate supposed explanation has to explain. And they don't. So a psychedelic trip, yeah, they might see wild colors, right? Or they might see a tunnel. Or they might see other beings. I'm not sure they're not actually having some kind of cross the veil experience. Hmm. They might be. And God warns us not to do that because you're going in unprotected. It's another interesting thing that people who have these near-death experiences on their way to heaven, they're greeted usually either by angels or by the welcoming committee, that they know they're there to welcome them, love them, and protect them on their journey. And I've asked them, I like, protect them from what? Protect you from what? And every one of them said, I don't know. I just knew that. And there's a lot of things there on the other side that you just intrinsically know. And that was one of them.
Well, you know, Ephesians talks about principalities and powers. We talk about this being a spiritual warfare zone. This doesn't necessarily just mean here on earth, but yeah, that makes sense. You got a demonic realm and a spiritual realm. They're still battling right on the other side of the veil. So maybe that's what the quote unquote bad trip is. Someone has a bad trip and it's much more demonic centered.
The demonic came out, mm-hmm. came out to play.
Yep.
You know, they met. And so here's an interesting thing. You know, this guy, Howard Storm, that I interviewed, tenured college professor, atheist. He dies in France when he couldn't get surgery after his duodenum rupture. Initially, he's in the worst pain of his life. And then suddenly he finds himself standing by his bed and he said, I felt better than I've ever felt before. I felt like Superman, like superpowers. And he looks down and he sees his body, but he doesn't get it that he's dead because he always thought death was just lights out. That's what he was expecting. Hmm. And so he's confused. And then there are these people in the hallway of the hospital saying, Howard, come with us. We're here to take you. And he said, and he thought they were the hospital attendants taking him to surgery finally, because he'd been waiting for like 8 hours to go to surgery for him to find a doctor. So he starts to follow them. And they said, you know, we've been waiting for a long time. Come on. And he said, well, I'm sick. I need surgery. We said, we know all about that. Come with us. We're going to help you. Don't you want to feel better? Okay. Long story short, again, time doesn't work the same way and distance doesn't work the same way. And so he follows them and he ends up, it gets darker and darker. And he starts to realize we're not going to surgery. And he's hearing them making jokes. And long story short, they end up taking him into this outer darkness, just like Jesus describes, just pitch black. And they start just mauling him. Mm. But they're playing with him. It's sadistic. Mm. And they're just mauling and playing with him. And in that, he hears this thought in his gut, pray to God. Pray to God. And long story short, he is literally, his ego is fighting with him. I don't believe in God. I'm not gonna pray to God. And yet he's getting mauled. And then he starts to just say words with God in it, and they start to get angrier, but they back off. And he ends up remembering a song that when someone took him to Sunday school as a kid, Jesus loves me, and that's all he could remember. Mm-hmm. And he started to think, you know, and he said, I don't know how long I was there. It could have been an eternity. He said, I didn't know, but I was thinking about my life and how this was the sewer of life and this is where I belonged because I'd led a sewered life, basically. And he cries out to Jesus to save him. And into this outer darkness comes this brilliant point of light. It's brighter and brighter, brighter than the sun, which is another thing that they commonly say, but not hard to look at. Arms reach out, pick him up, hold him like a baby, like you would your kid, and rubs his back while he's just sobbing. Because he just realizes, I was so wrong. Hmm. And so Jesus takes him out of there and gives him a life review. He's the one who then came back and left his tenured position and became a Christian pastor. But the hellish, you know, the thing I realized is that if Howard's experience had stopped when those people, those nice people in the hallway were saying, hey, come with us. And he felt great. He felt like Superman. And he's still alive. He's still himself. Let's say he had come back into his body, which some many do. It's that short, right? He would have said, atheists go to heaven. Hmm. Or atheists live on and there is no God, but they're nice people and it's all good. And that is what many people had said. And that's what took me 35 years to write the book too, as it was, you know, it was like confusing until I started to get those clues like, oh, there's a border or boundary. This is not full eternal life or death. Hmm. They haven't fully crossed over. That's why they can still call out to God and he rescues them.
So
and
I've got, what would you I've call got, this? Would you call this what? Some sort of purgatory then you're talking about?
No.
What would you call it?
No, I think it is in between. I think it's in between. It is the pathway. And different people go and I really, Brian, I mean, I've tried to correlate, you know, like, well, how long are they dead and how long was their experience? It doesn't correlate.
Is this the quote unquote third heaven we see in 2 Corinthians 12:2, and Paul says he knows God's one of the third heaven. Is that what this is? I'm trying to have some scriptural reference for this in between. I'm not gonna disagree with what everyone's saying. If all these stories line up, it means something. But what this in between thing, like, what's the scriptural verbiage that you would pin this to?
Well, I have heard Christians who have had these near death experiences, and I don't know if this is accurate, but talk about it like.
And by the way, and maybe the Bible doesn't even talk about this interplay. I mean, you're not hearing me say anything that I think is absolutely anti-Bible. I'm just wondering if this lines up with something we know in the scriptures.
Well, like when the scriptures talk about the first heaven, the second heaven, the third heaven.
Yes.
So Paul. Which, by the way, Paul had a near-death experience, I think. Acts chapter 14, he's stoned to death.
Absolutely.
In Lystra, dragged out of the city and left for dead, and then he revives.
Yep.
And then 2 Corinthians 12, he says, 14 years ago, whether I was in my body or out of my body, I don't know. Why? Because you still have a body. Paul's the one who talks about spiritual body. It's raised in weakness, but it's buried in weakness. It's raised in power, right?
Yes.
And so he had one and he said, I was taken up to the third heaven and I was shown, I saw and heard things, you know, inexpressible, some things you're not allowed to tell. And so where was I going with that? I was going somewhere else.
We were going with what the scriptural nomenclature would be for this in between.
Oh, first, second, third heaven. Yeah. So some have said, yeah, first heaven is like what we'd call the heavens, right? That we can see in our four dimensions of time and space. Second heaven would be when you cross that dimensional barrier, when those people are above their bodies in a spiritual body, but they're still in the realm of the earth. And there are angels and there are demons, and they encounter both. And so that's the second heaven. The third heaven is what we think of heaven. It's like the paradise. It's like the city of God, where the throne of God is and all that.
Well, the aggressive life is about doing things with your life. This is fascinating. This is amazing. I'm not done on this conversation, but I'm just curious right now, like you being this close to this many questions, are there things, John, that you're doing differently right now that you wouldn't be doing had you not had this deep dive into this topic?
I wouldn't have gone into ministry, I don't think. Mm. I mean, honestly, it's like, you know, I had researched a lot of these, like I said, all the way back in the 80s. And it was a part of what was like, man, you know, this is like so real, you know, and there's so many points of evidence. I mean, it wasn't near-death experiences that led me to faith in Jesus. It was actually God foretelling what he was going to do, prophetically foretelling through Jesus, and then history validating all of it, not only what he's going to do with Jesus, but what he did with the whole nation of Israel that happened in 1948, you know, 2,000 years of not being a nation, and suddenly it's a nation again. And that was all foretold in Isaiah. Like, how do you, I've never ever heard an atheist explain that away, ever. Hmm. They just don't deal with it. They don't want to, but I can't. It's like, and so that combined with these near-death experiences was a lot of what made me go, man, you know what? Life is too short to not invest in. And that's what I'm doing now. I mean, you know, my wife and I started a church 25 years ago, you know, as you know, and very similar to, you know, the mission of Crossroads, same kind of deal. And I didn't really plan on leaving. I didn't. And a couple years ago, the Lord made it really clear to me, as clear as when he had me leave and come start Gateway, I want you to write, and I want you to write more about this. And honestly, I didn't necessarily want to. Like, it's been 7 years. You don't normally have a book hit number one on Amazon and you don't write again.
Yeah.
Not if you want to be a writer, right?
Yeah.
But I thought I did what I was supposed to do, and I think I'm done. And he said, you know, he said no. So yeah, to the aggressive life, it's like, man, you know what? This life is a blink. And if there's anything that you know, I think these people say that we need to hear is that's the life to live for. And you need to live your life now in light of that, because that's the one that's real.
Are you finding, though, that there's daily decisions that you're making or not making based on an awareness of heaven? Like, for instance, I recently bought a very expensive scent-proof ground blind for hunting deer. I was like, okay, let's just get this thing right now. And it's expensive, like really freaking expensive, but I won't have to worry about showering off my scent before I go in to use my crossbow, and it'll be a little warmer. And yeah, it's not electrified or anything. It just locks in the scent. And I thought, like, I don't know, man, if I really was living in expectation of heaven, would I make that kind of expenditure or would I not? Do you think that kind of granularly about your life in heaven?
Yes, but I think there's a positive side to look at it instead of a negative side. Like, the negative side I'd say is, what do I do without? What do I not do? But the positive side is, how do I live forward? And I don't mean forward into retirement. That's what most of us do, right?
Yes.
But forward.
Yeah.
So yeah. So like my wife and I, we're taking Jesus at his word when he said, hey, you know what? Give and it'll be given back to you in the measure you measure it. Like, I remember a few years ago, you know, I've always given and tithed, but I read that and I was like, huh, I don't do that. You know, like, if I really believe that, what would I do? And I did start to do that. And that was a lot of just hearing these people and realizing, you know, now all the things that we live for here, I have become convinced all this is shadow. You know, almost like Plato said, you know, and maybe he, you know, maybe he was really onto something, right? That this is a shadow. You read in Hebrews chapter 8 that the tabernacle that God had Moses build was a shadow of the real one in heaven. So maybe, you know, and you think about the light of the sun is just a shadow of the light of God. And the water that we drink and our whole body and our earth is sustained on is just a shadow of what Jesus offered, living water, right, to anyone. So maybe all of this, like, because they talk about the trees and the grass and the flowers and the mountains and the, you know, all the beauty of earth is just a shadow, just a, you know, it's like X a thousand,
yeah,
is what we've got coming. So yeah, I do. I think it does affect how I live. But I think there's another side. Like, God is a God of, how do I say this? Because I'm not the health, wealth, prosperity type, right? You know that.
Yes.
But God is not stingy. He's not stingy. He's not like, you know, I just want you to suffer while you're here. And we will go through suffering. We will. That's a part of it. But I guess, you know, I guess I think about it like that too, that, you know, it's not just what should I do without, but yeah, it's more what should I do?
Well, you're doing something that's pretty aggressive. You've reached an apex of in many ways. You started a church that works, is large, has grown. You've built an organization under you, around you, and you're stepping away from it at a fairly young age. Just tell us about that. Why did you decide to do that?
I mean, I felt like God was telling me to, and he made it really clear. Over a period of 2 years, he basically brought 14 different people to say the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I think I got the message. You know, my friend that I let read it all and see it all, he said, so you're like that guy in the flood who's up on the roof and the waters are rising and you keep praying for God to rescue you. And then you drowned and you say, God, I thought you were going to rescue me. And he said, well, I sent a boat and I sent a helicopter.
Yeah.
And you kept waiting for God. And he was like, I think that's you. And he's like, I think you're right. You know? So Anyway,
well, man, it's pretty cool to see what you're doing. And also just really cool to meet somebody who's had a book that's been as effective as it is. I got it right here. Imagine There's No Heaven. Oh, no, that was John Lennon. Imagine, imagine heaven. Imagine heaven. New York Times bestseller, over 1 million copies sold. This is fantastic, John. I hope a lot of people get turned on to it and read it. And we can't wait for your next book that's going to come out. I'm actually I don't think my path is like yours, but boy, I really admire you for choosing to step away from something that's secure and go into an uncertain future, which is going to be more writing. That's pretty cool, man. Way to go. And one final question. Your dad, you mentioned your dad on his deathbed, that book, any story with your dad and faith? What happened?
Yeah, it was tough because I had never ever had a conversation with him about faith at all. And so I was really like, And then years later, it wasn't a long time, it was probably 5 years later, I was moving some stuff for my mom and I came across, you remember that My Heart Christ Home?
Yep, I do.
Bible study?
Yep.
He had done it.
Oh, wow.
And it was all his thoughts and answers.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, this is my dad's heart. Like, he did know the Lord and it was real. And he was just, he didn't talk to me about it.
Oh. Interesting. John, this has been really, really great. If someone wants to follow up with you, they want to learn more about you and your stuff, where do they go?
It's a good question.
John, this is not good. You're going to be a budding author. You're going to step away from your day gig of an organization that pays your bills, and you can't even tell people like a website. Maybe you're not aggressive. Maybe you're just stupid.
Well, it could be.
You at least have a Facebook account. You got one of those?
Yeah. We have, go to imagineheaven.net.
Okay, there you go.
Imagineheaven.net. And we've got a Facebook page as well.
All right, my friend. Hey, man, I think the world of you. I respect you greatly. You're one of my favorite people in the world. Every time we hang out, I think, gosh, we don't do this enough. So let's do it for real in person soon. Hey, guys.
Definitely.
Ladies and gentlemen, you heard this. This is real stuff. This man's a deep well. He shared with us deep, deep, deep stuff. Hey, it's time to start living your life outside of just paycheck to paycheck. It's time to stop trying to get through the quarter, get through the year, get through your 20s. It's time to have a higher vision, something that looks further out in the future. And John's done that for us. Make your decisions for the long term, something that's going to be a blessing to you and be helpful for you for the long, long time. Stop being like all the weenie boys and weenie girls that do all the passive things that are all short-term based. John's elevated our sights. I'm thankful for him and I'm thankful for you. We'll see you next time on The Aggressive Life. Well, that's it. We'll be back with new episodes next week. Maybe you've got an old episode from the vault that's one of your favorite that you want to see in video form. If so, let Dirt know. That's dirt@bryantome.com, and you may see it in a future Aggressive Life podcast. Take something you heard today, make something happen with it, put your life into action. We'll see you next time on The Aggressive Life. Thanks for joining us on this journey toward aggressive living. Find more resources, articles, past episodes, and more at bryantome.com. My new book, a 60-day devotional called The 5 Marks for Man, 60 Days to a Powerful Life, along with all the other books in the 5 Marks library, are open right now on Amazon. Be sure to leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Then send an email to Dirt. That's dirt@bryantome.com to get a free Aggressive Life sticker. Find more on Instagram @bryantome. The Aggressive Life is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio.